It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've rescued from bankruptcy, but how would we operate? So there are little bits and pieces that we've put together, and I think, you know, going back to this, just we know how to work. I grew up working on farms in Southeast Idaho, and like my colleague and the CEO of this portfolio company that he had taken public, we know how to dig ditch. We're extremely focused. We're a very light organization. There are only about a dozen of us here in the office, and we definitely fight above our weight class, you know, the kinds of deals that we've done.
Welcome to Innovation and Leadership, where I interview uncommonly high achievers like top investment fund managers, elite special operations soldiers, startup CEOs who sold their companies for billions of dollars, pro athletes, Hollywood filmmakers, really as many different kinds of experts as I can. The whole idea is to hear how they did it and then what advice they have for the rest of us that can be applied to the organizations we're trying to grow and innovate. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. Today on the show, I've got James Clark. James, thanks for making time.
How are you doing, Jess?
So for people that don't know you, can you tell folks a couple of the things that you've accomplished?
Oh, well, first, appreciate you having me on today. It's really kind of you and thoughtful. I'm an entrepreneur turned investor. I started a company right out of school, out of my undergrad, and had three partners that had the exact same skill set that I did. That doesn't always go so well. And timing didn't go so well for me either. I started a business in 2001, just 6 weeks after 9/11, in the internet space. So .com bubble had burst. World was falling apart, and it was not an ideal time to raise capital. But it was a good time for me to start a business. I started a company called ClearLink. About 10 years later, we exited that business. But 2 years prior to selling the business, of course, so that was, we sold and closed on selling that business in the beginning of 2011. 2 years prior, we had run a process trying to sell the business also. I had brought in one of our operators to run the business as CEO. But again, the world fell apart in 2008, as you well know. And so he was left running the company. All of our investors the pool of buyers dried up. And we ended up not selling the business, of course. I found myself without a job. And ultimately, you know, I had to figure out what I was going to do until that business sold. So I set up an office in New York. And started figuring out what I would do as sort of that next chapter of my life, which was, of course, fell in love with investing and learned a lot while I was out on Wall Street for those couple of years. Flew back and forth every other week. And then as soon as the business closed, and we did sell ClearLink, set up shop running Clark Capital. And ever since, we've been investing in sort of growth equity as our thesis. And our primary focus is businesses that have sort of nailed it, and then we come in with some growth capital and help them scale. And I think we've done okay over the last several years. So I think we've been around almost 8 years now doing that. We last year had two IPOs that we participated in and helped to lead. And then we've exited a couple of our other businesses, and we've got a good little track record. And I think we're ready for the next chapter of our business to really get serious about what we're doing. So it's been a great run. We've been very, very fortunate, but we're really happy with the spot where we find ourselves now and look forward to the future.
That's exciting. So the show here, Leadership and People, you've obviously been involved in leadership, growing these different businesses and lead in a different way now where it's portfolio companies, maybe more than your own staff.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about maybe a leadership lesson that served you well?
That's a great question. There's so many, and I think as I think about leadership lessons, my problem is I think I've learned them, and then I forget them, and I have to relearn them, and it's a painful process, right? So you know this firsthand, but we look at our businesses, and there are always problems. There are great and wonderful things that take place in business. But when we look at the problems that we're trying to solve, and entrepreneurship is not easy, right? If it were, everybody'd be doing it. But as we look at the problems, they're not generally the business problems that we get caught up in. They're the people problems. And so we become, you know, and I talk about this a lot in our organizations that, you know, yes, we can learn this process or we can be the best in class on a certain thing, but it's if we forget about our people, we've forgotten everything. And so it's being able to really, truly, and it probably sounds trite, probably sounds very simple, but, you know, just remembering the people and the personalities in this. And we can't solve all problems, but it's always the people problems that are the most challenging. And if we can overcome those, then we usually find ourselves in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of a sticky one that you've been through?
How much time is your show?
It's only eight hours.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that there's one that comes to mind right now relative to the challenges that we see. I mean,
or back in ClearLink, or just something of we needed to make a change, and I realized I waited too long, and then
all the time. I think one of the things. Okay, so if you get specific about that making changes, I think my nature is probably a kinder, gentler nature than a lot of CEOs or entrepreneurs or even investors, and so my tendency is to let's hold off to pass judgment on a certain personality or operator or, senior executive in a business. And if I had just followed my instincts, which were generally, we probably need to cut ties or we need to pivot or make a change, we probably would have been much better off doing that. And I keep thinking, okay, the kinder, gentler version of this or the more generous version is going to serve us well. And I think net, we're ahead, right? But it's easy to say things like fire fast or, you know, cut dead weight. But it's really hard for me personally as a manager because I happen to care about people a lot. Again, not to be the trite, I'm a people person or anything like that, but I get the personalities. Thinking about people's families and being able to sleep well at night is really important to me. And so we find ourselves probably on the warmer and fuzzier side of, you know, growth equity as an investor or even an operator. So I'm not that cold, calculated killer that some might describe as, a typical either venture capitalist or a private equity investor. So, yeah, those kinds of erring to the kinder side is maybe, you know, the downside of who I am as a personality. And maybe, you know, that's how people have benefited in some ways, but also ways that we've suffered as an organization sometimes in being a little softer than we ought.
So knowing that about yourself, how do you, what kind of self-talk do you have? How do you overcome that about yourself, knowing that you've got it? How do you do better in the future, recognizing that tendency?
I first of all realize that I'm probably not going to change. I've been in, you know, using a term that we hear quite a lot in business, a crucial conversation, right? Where a senior manager within one of our organizations came to me and said, you know, it was one of those conversations where it's, hey, we need more from you. We need you to do better. And that person responded and said, I need you to yell at me. And I thought about that and went silent for a moment and responded and said, you know, I appreciate that, but I'm not going to change who I am just to satisfy your needs. And listen, I look at that and I think about that conversation and probably would have been the right thing, probably would have helped performance relative to that person. They were asking for it. But at the end of all of this, I'm not likely to change sort of, you know, the trajectory of who I am. To help be, you know, the kind of manager that might be a bulldog or a stickler for this or that. And I think I'm more of a guide, a principal guide in what we do. And a strategist. I think we've got really good ideas that we help execute on. And I'm a cheerleader. So it's hard for me to, you know, be a screaming and yelling coach, if you will. So maybe I wear the skirt of a cheerleader and we're proud to do that. So.
Too funny. Yeah. Well, talking about this people thing, you know, coming up with good ideas, finding the right people to do business with, when you think about relationships and networking and spending time with the kind of people that that might be the kind of individual you'd want to do stuff with in the future. What's some of your approach? What do you do? What do you like to do?
Well, you know, we're betting on horses more than we're betting on races, for sure. And so we first look at these operators and how can we build a meaningful relationship with this individual and back them, essentially, right? So I'll give you the example of probably our most notable, and I wouldn't call it an exit because we're still holders in this one, but they had a phenomenal IPO and the business continues to grow, and it's this great operator out of Idaho. And, you know, he talks about ditch digging. And when he said those words from one Idaho boy to another Idaho boy, it just landed. It resonates with me that, you know, he gets how to work. And so I wouldn't call this operator the most polished. And certainly I think he's far more polished than he was, you know, 7-8 years ago. But I have watched him dig ditch day in, day out, pivot again to a strategy that is, I believe, a world-class strategy. And guess what? The polish has come. He is, in my humble opinion, the best CEO in the make that I've ever seen, because he first knows how to dig ditch and work really hard. I don't know that I'm answering the question specifically relative to sort of what we do and picking people strategy, but boy, I watch for those kinds of subtle cues that are, I get out of work and nobody works harder than this guy. And the polish came and we backed him, and it has continued to be, you know, a roaring success because of his efforts and a relationship that he's built.
Is there an example of that? Is there, like, is it necessarily that he's putting in more hours? Is it that he's putting more hours in the right thing? Like, for people who want to get a little more context to that, he's digging ditch. He's going that extra mile. What does that look like?
Well, he's in the office at 5:30 every morning. He is an insane road warrior. I mean, he's everywhere. He doesn't need counsel from me, but he asks for it. So not a text, not an email, never long emails, but he'll pick up the phone and he'll ask for my opinion. And then he's going to do whatever he's going to do because he's got good instincts. And but that makes for an exceptional operator. And he's focused. He is focused. And I think that's the single most important thing for an operator to remember. Just focus on what's most important. And the rest sort of follows that way. So it's been marvelous to watch, to see him, because it's not been easy. And his past is not an easy past. He's had some real challenges in business and with other partners and things like that. But it was a big bet for us. But I remember hearing this term, dig ditch. And he does every single day. Extreme focus. So it's pretty great.
Interesting. Well, I want to go maybe a different direction on the same theme. Mm-hmm. You think about the different staff you've had back at the ClearLink days, or mm-hmm. or whether it's, you know, people involved in the office here,
sure.
or the other businesses, when you think about identifying opportunities for staff to maybe grow in their leadership, and knowing that finger pointing and telling them to typically is not effective, what's your approach of helping your people become leaders?
Oh, that's a great question. As I again, you understand that you know, I'm probably at that midlife stage. I won't say it's a crisis, right? But as I think and look back on, you know, our time at ClearLink, that I was just a kid, sort of, you know, just trying to will it. I didn't have any other choices. I didn't have any other options. We had to succeed. Just giving you a little bit of context as to how that started. My, you know, I started in the basement of my fiance, convinced her that I was going to make it a success. She had a well-paying job. I convinced her, and I don't know how I did it, to invest in us so that we wouldn't have to go get other outside investors. And she did, even before we were married. So, you know, that the name even of the company was her maiden name, Earl, and my last name, Clark, put together Clural Inc. And that's where that came from. And, you know, we just willed it because we had to make that work. And I didn't know what I was doing. But I didn't have any other options. We were expecting our first child. I told her by the time we would have our first baby, we would be cash flow positive. And again, remember,
there was a deadline, right?
There was an absolute deadline. And so, again, back to that point of pivoting and pivoting again, we didn't have the model dialed in. But and not being a terribly creative person, simply saying, okay, there is something out there, and there's a business that someone is making work. I came from door knocking and selling satellite dishes door to door, had a company with these partners that I described where we all had the same skill set, left that, started ClearLink.
And was that sale number disclosed, what you sold ClearLink
for? No, okay. We didn't share that. It's been sold again to a publicly traded company. I think they've disclosed that number. But you know, I think there are a couple thousand full-time employees there today. And great team. And so many of the initial operators and the talent that we brought in initially are still there. So it's been wonderful to watch. But we were all just kids. I was the senior statesman as sort of the early 30-something. And the rest were, you know, still doing their undergrads and it's fun to see the talent that's come out of that. But you know, back to this point of having to make it work, I didn't have a choice with ClearLink. We have a choice every day as it relates to what we're doing. I mean, I could have, and we laugh about this, but we could have, you know, bought some silly little island or go buy a house on a beach and sip alcohol-free margaritas for a kid like me and do that. I think that would have been a pitiful outcome for me and wouldn't have been satisfying at all. And so we got really thoughtful about how we were going to build this organization here at Clark Capital and how we would try to help influence these organizations that we were going to be a part of. Some we've founded, others we've simply invested in, some we've rescued from bankruptcy. But how would we operate? You know, so there are little bits and pieces that we've put together, and I think, you know, going back to this, just we know how to work. I grew up working on farms in Southeast Idaho, and like my colleague and the CEO of this portfolio company that he had taken public, we know how to dig ditch. We're extremely focused. We're a very light organization. There are only about a dozen of us here in the office, and we definitely fight above our weight class. You know, the kinds of deals that we've done and look forward to doing in the future. But as I think about sort of the core of the core of who we are and what we're trying to instill, you know, with those that come to work here at Clark Capital and within our organization, is that we are operators first and investors second. You know, Jess, I know you've spent your time out on Wall Street, and you know all these investors that close their eyes and write a check and feel like they need to beat you up in a boardroom. But I think part of what we do at Clark Capital with our portfolio companies is lock arms and then walk forward and even run with these, you know, these great entrepreneurs. And so I think that we're kindred spirits because we've built companies ourselves. We continue to build companies. I probably have one or two more left in me to go start or found or whatever that might look like. But we really enjoy that part of the business and helping as sort of co-entrepreneurs, but also writing, you know, good-sized checks to help these entrepreneurs move forward in their businesses. So I know that's a long-winded answer to your question, but that's a little bit about us and what sort of the thesis looks like for us now and in the future as we build Clark Capital.
That's great. Well, I know we're kind of winding down a bit here. Maybe as a final question, what's a piece of advice you would want to go back and give an earlier version of yourself?
I'm terrible at giving advice. As one who has received awful advice from very, very smart people, I've gotten, to be fair, I've gotten really great advice as well. But some really smart and very successful people have given me advice that was absolutely incorrect. And had I followed that, I would have gone on a very different trajectory that I'm on right now. So I'm very cautious in giving advice. So perhaps my advice is don't listen to every word that, you know, smart or wealthy people give to you.
Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, Guy Kawasaki, the kind of head evangelist for Steve Jobs when Mac came out, he talks about the bozos, right? Oh. He says when you're starting a business or you're running
I might be one of those guys.
Well, that's what he says. He says there's two kinds of bozos. There's the your brother-in-law bozo, which you spot right off the bat. He says the other kind are dangerous because they wear Breitling watches. He's in a Breitling, right? Okay. They wear a Breitling watch and they drove a fancy car to get here.
Oh, yeah.
And his example was, he said... He got a call, and his answer to the request was, "Well, I don't want to drive an hour, and besides, I don't see how that can be a business anyways." It was when he was being offered the job of being the CEO of Yahoo.
Oh, come on. Is that right?
So he says he figures that cost him $2 billion.
What That's a cool $2 billion. Yeah.
He says, the first billion for my family, that's fine. It's the second billion that kills me. But he brings up this point of, and I would be interested in any guidance you have for folks of, obviously, we want to learn from other people's mistakes and wisdom. And at the same time, just because people have accomplished things doesn't mean that their advice is ideal for us. And I'd be interested in any kind of what your gut check is or how you make the decision of whether that advice is something you're going to follow or not.
No, you know, I love that example that you brought up of Guy Kawasaki, because you could sincerely sit in your pajamas for the rest of your life in your basement, staring at a television set, thinking about the $2 billion that you missed out on. And I know a lot of guys that happen to do that. It might not be a $2 billion number, but they missed out on a certain deal, or their company didn't go the way that it planned, or they didn't get the promotion. And my counsel is pretty simple, and I think it's universally applicable, is that you just want to keep moving forward and stop and don't dwell on the missed opportunities. Focus on the opportunities ahead. I've had my own, not $2 billion misses, but my several hundred million dollar misses. A choice that I made, and it was the right choice, but it happened to be probably not the financially as beneficial a choice had I gone the other direction. I've done that over and over, but I don't beat myself up. I just try to make up for it in the next decision. And so dwelling on that past, and again, I'm saying things that you already know and hopefully your listeners don't find trite, but just focus, you know, a forward focus, a growth mindset. We hear a lot about that today, and we love talking about that with our children, with our entrepreneurs. But that growth mindset of moving forward is really exciting to us. Dwelling on the past is so counterintuitive and not helpful in any way.
It's interesting how we humans need to keep learning that, though. Yeah. You know, driving around today, I was listening to a book going through a bunch of the Stoics from 2,500 years ago. And you've got Marcus Aurelius talking about dwell on the present and be consumed with, you know, be present, be consumed with the present.
Fascinating.
Worry about the next thing you're doing right now. And you know, he's got his anecdote about not worrying about the past or the future, but the next step kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting how 2,500 years later, we still need to master that about ourselves, right?
Isn't that the truth? And listen, I'm so glad you're bringing that up. And I, you know, I have a fellow board member in this publicly traded company that we have. And he asked me on a drive to the airport, he said, and both of his kids are at Ivy League schools today. And he just said, what's the single most important characteristic you want to teach your children, James? And I said, let me turn the question on you, Mark. Clearly, you're asking me this question for a reason. And he said, well, I want them to have confidence. Well, that's interesting, because I know a lot of very, very confident people that happen to be wrong a lot, right? Often wrong, never in doubt. I thought, well, that's great. That sounds like a really interesting thing. And again, he came back to me and asked me the question. I just said, I want them to be driven. I want my children to be driven. I want those with whom I work also to be very driven in what they're doing. Because I think, you know, I'm certainly not the smartest guy in the room. I will never say that I am, but I'm a pretty driven individual. I've probably had to kick down the back door of every either Ivy League or, you know, overseas institution that I've been to, because I'm driven. Or will a company like ClearLink to happen, or will an IPO to take place, because we happen to be quite driven and we simply want more and be forward focused in what we do. So hope that's, you know, something that's meaning. It's certainly something that's meaningful to us, and I hope it's something that's meaningful to, you know, those that are listening within the context of our conversation.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us here today.
Thank you. Pleasure's mine.
Well, that's it for the episode. One other thing I wanted to tell you about, if you'll remember the guys from Convoy in episodes back, Ken Free and Trent Mano, I went on one of their CEO trips to New York, and I met a guy named Brent Thompson. Very successful entrepreneur. He was former CEO of Jive Communications, big company now, I think $300 or $400 million. Anyways, he started a new company called blipbillboards.com. I'm super stoked they're a sponsor now. But I remember a year and some ago when I met him, I thought it was genius. Instead of having to buy 6 months or a year's worth of billboard for thousands of dollars, you can buy 8 seconds at a time for like 10 or 20 cents. You pick what billboard you want it on, what time of day you want it to run. And it just puts so much power in the hands of marketers and CEOs who want to try something and see if it works. You can buy as many or as few as you want, change it as many times as you want. I think now our podcast is being advertised on billboards in like 18 different states because we have these guys as sponsors. We're pretty excited about it. Hope you check out blipbillboards.com. Thanks.